welcome to the Brothers Mysterium. We are your hosts. I am Tommy. He is Eric.
Heyo.
And this is sort of a special episode. It's not a bonus episode. It's more of a continuation episode. And basically, coming out of our previous show, A Residual Haunting, where we talked to Laura about the childhood home that she grew up in, where her parents still reside. She told us a lot of stories. And in going back and listening and reflecting, we kind of realized that we should speak to her parents. While she was present for a lot of the activity, a lot of it centered around her mom, or she was just a kid, and we kind of wanted to get her parents' take on it. And Laura was one of the very first interviews we did, so I don't know if it just never dawned on us at the time that we could kind of fill in some questions, some holes, by speaking to her parents. But we like to leave no stone unturned, so that's exactly what we did. I called her parents and talked to them all about this haunting. A quick note before we get into my conversation with Laura's parents. This episode is going to be more like our bonus episode style. I know everybody loves the super high-end production and the sound design that goes into each and every Mysterium episode. This one's going to be a little bit more raw, a little bit more rough cut, a little more gritty. And the reason for that is because once we were inspired to do this follow-up interview, we figured we should put it out as quickly as possible in a timely manner, get the content out, tie up any loose ends, especially before we continued our regularly scheduled programming and jumped into a brand new haunting, a brand new experience with brand new people. With that said, we know you're going to love it, and it's time we meet Laura's parents, Dawn and David.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. How are you, Tommy?
I am fantastic. Thank you for making the time to chat with me this evening.
No problem.
So I guess my first question will be, there were several incidents that Laura described that she herself was not really present for, such as like the wine bottle. Is there anything you can add or elaborate to that story?
Yeah, we need to correct one of Laura's memories about the light bulb.
Sure, we can.
The blender.
Yeah, we can start with both of them. If there's corrections, go right ahead.
He asked about the wine bottle. Let me answer him about the wine bottle.
All right.
I'm sorry. We might jump on each other a little bit here. We've been married for 33 years. So.
Hey, no problem. let's kick it off with the wine bottle, and then we'll switch gears, and we'll talk about light bulbs. So the wine bottle, take it away.
Okay. Well, the wine bottle incident occurred when I was home all alone with just the animals, which was our pug dog, Winston, and the two cats, Rita and Spot. And sound asleep in our bedroom. All the animals were with me. David was on a business trip, and Laura must have been with a friend or something. And middle of the night, I can't say what time of the night it was, I hear a thump and then a kind of a woo, 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 woo sound. And I sit straight up in the bed. The dog is right there beside me, and he perks up, and the cats are laying in bed with me, and I was like, what was that? And I head downstairs to the basement, and I turn on the light, and I see the wine bottle sitting in the middle of the room, but it wasn't sitting straight up. It was on its side, laying down in the middle of the room.
Okay.
And it was about 10 to 12 feet from the wine rack that it had been in. And it was one of those wine racks where the, you know, the bottles sit, you know, cork end down in the wine rack. And
right, right.
It was, the wine rack had been full, was full of bottles of wine. And this one bottle that was no longer in that wine rack, and it was sitting, laying on its side in the middle of the floor. So that was weird. I felt a little odd.
Seems very weird. Seems a very unnatural position. If it fell out of the wine rack or something, doesn't really make sense.
Correct. And all the animals were with me. None of the, you know, cats were downstairs messing around. Not that I think that they could have done that, but so I basically looked at it, and looked at the wine bottle, looked at the rack, took the wine bottle, and I picked it up, and I put it back in the rack, and I went back to bed. I didn't know what else to do, so that's what I did.
Right. Yeah, interesting.
So that's the first correction of Laura's, because she, I think, described it as sitting up straight, just standing in the middle of the room, and it wasn't. It was on its side.
Right, gotcha.
But the sound was very clear. It was almost as if when I went down there, I expected to see something that had fallen and had rolled somewhere, because it sounded like something fell and rolled somewhere.
Very intriguing. So we'll go to our next correction, the light bulbs. Can you fill us in on what the actual light bulb events were?
Yes. Well, the main light bulb event happened early on when we moved into the house that Laura was describing was in our garage, where there was a light bulb in the ceiling, which was high in the ceiling. I couldn't reach it without getting on a step stool or something. David could reach it on his tippy toes, I guess. But we could not figure out for the life of us where the light switch was for that light bulb. And we just couldn't figure it out.
This is an old house, and the wiring was screwy.
So we unscrewed the light bulb because we didn't want it on. He did. And then coming back the next day, later on, and finding that light bulb on again. And we were like, how did that happen? And then David reached up to touch the light bulb, and it was tightened up into the socket after he had loosened it significantly. So it wasn't sitting, we hadn't removed the light bulb. It wasn't sitting on the shelf or anything.
Right, but it was loosened, and no one else could have reached it in the household, obviously.
No, nobody could have reached it. David was the only one that could have reached it without getting assistance from something. And so that was the light bulb incident. That kind of started us out, I think. That particular incident was one of the first ones that occurred.
Next, I asked Dawn and David about the intriguing incident involving the blender.
Back to correct some of Laura's recollections of some of these events, the blender, which, by the way, the blender on your Facebook page is exactly the blender that we had in our kitchen.
Hey, I do good research.
That was amazing. It's a Newtone
that's right.
Blender motor. So I had used the blender. It worked great. And I had cleaned it. And unlike Laura's story, I had actually put it all back together, and it was sitting meshed with the motor in the countertop.
Ah.
So she used it. It was clean. And rather than put it in a cabinet, she meshed it with the countertop.
Right.
Right.
And okay.
Left the kitchen.
Then left the kitchen, and it was in the bathroom, actually, when I heard it come on, and was quite startled. It was startling, and I went back into the kitchen, and I just stood there and looked at it for a bit. I was like, okay, this is weird, and it was not on low. It was on very high. It wasn't on completely high.
There was like 4 notches, maybe?
No, there was like 8 or 10 notches.
Oh, what?
Yeah, and it was like on an 8 of the 10.
Oh, so it was on frappe.
It was either 8 or 10 notches, and it was it might have been 8 notches, and it was on like number six. So it was on quite high, and I was like, how did this happen? Because I'm a skeptic as well. So I'm like, how did this happen?
She tried to simulate the failure mode.
Yes.
Because what you would say in the closet.
I'm like, did the little switch get stuck in between two of the little, what do you call it? We're kind of notches into different speeds, right?
It's a potentiometer.
Right.
And there was a, unlike, remember on an old television set when you change the channels, it'll go click, 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 right? Turning that knob, it'll make that clicking sound.
Right.
And you could feel because it was mechanical. Well, it's the same thing with this switch, only it wasn't, it didn't have as much force holding back each click. It was more like a thunk, 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 thunk as you would move it.
Right. But I could not get it to stay in between either one of those notches. I couldn't get it to sit there. It would always click into either one of the other spaces. And I just could not get it to do that. So I was like, I'm pretty sure I turned it off. I didn't, you know, do anything to it after I meshed it back up. I just walked out. And so I was really confused by how that could happen. And my only explanation is that it was some sort of force that was not seen by me.
I then asked if there was any paranormal activity not mentioned in Laura's episode.
Our unusual happenings, they were not exclusively at night. Many of them would happen during broad daylight. The one that Laura didn't tell was, I work at home, and I'm in my office down at the end of the hall, and I'm home alone. I think Laura's at school, Dawn is out, but I'm expecting Dawn to be coming home. Now, like I said, this is an old house, and we have hardwood floors. And there are certain places when you walk on the hardwood floors that they will squeak, and you can hear them squeak. I know them. You know, you live in a house long enough, you know where the squeaking spots are, right?
Right, for sure.
Yeah, so I'm in my office, and I hear floorboard squeak, you know, several of them. And I'm going, oh, Dawn's home. Dawn, is that you? No answer. Dawn? No answer. I get up out of my chair, I walk down the hallway, I walk into the kitchen, I look out the door. I'm home alone. There's nobody there. The floor was squeaking by itself. Those very familiar floorboard squeaks that
wow.
you could tell were, that you were telling that you could tell were, was coming from the hallway, because I know what floorboards you know, I know where it squeaks.
Right. Right.
He's very auditory. Aware. He notices.
I'm auditorily aware?
Yes, you notice sounds. He notices sounds. unlike me, I don't notice sounds hardly at all, but I am the person that I can walk into the room and notice a knickknack out of place. I'm very aware that way. And he is not at all. So when he says that he heard something, I know he heard it. He used to hear other things, too, like it sounded like far away speaking.
I've actually heard what I'm going to describe to you more than once, but one time in particular it was fairly pronounced. So I worked for companies overseas, so I used to fly frequently, and I would get home late at night, 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, etc. And so one night I got home, pulled into the garage, closed the garage door, got out of my car and closed the garage door, and I was moving around to get my luggage out of the car. And I could, now it's at night, so it's very, very quiet, and I could hear what it sounded like, people talking, but it was very muted. And it kind of sounded like, I'll imitate it, it sounded like,
right, very muffled sounding, yeah.
Very muffled, and I'm going, wow, what is that? Who's up outside at this late at night? You know, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. And so I exit the garage, I walk around the garage, nobody there, I'm there alone. So what were those sounds? They definitely sounded like voices, very muffled, faraway voices, but I couldn't pin it to anything.
One of the other things was the faucets coming on.
Oh my.
And I know Laura talked about those stories, and those were pretty, she did a pretty good job of that. That was definitely happening on a regular basis.
I've lost track of the number of times that the faucets would come on by themselves.
Right, and one of the times that the faucets came on was when we had our real estate agent
here.
Oh
my God, we had just bought the house, we had closed in the house, we had moved in, and the real estate agent was a pretty nice guy. We invited him over for dinner, and him and his wife came over. Dawn made a very special dinner, and he said, wow, this is the best
meat.
This is the best meat because she made this tenderloin encrusted, pepper encrusted thing.
The best meat.
Yeah, I guess.
That's one hell of a compliment.
Yes, it was. We were telling him about some of the weird goings on in the house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember how we got directed to upstairs, but maybe I heard.
But we were down here.
Yes. For some reason, I can't remember how, but we ended up going upstairs, and there in the bathroom upstairs,
we heard it. When we were down here, we heard it. I went,
as I was telling Tom, that's right. Yes. As I was telling Tom about the whole ghost thing, and he was a little freaked out. He was a little weirded out by hearing these stories.
Yeah, he's a very religious man. So
very religious guy. And then the faucet came on upstairs, so we all go upstairs. God damn, there's the sink with the faucet running wide open.
So let's clarify this right now. So all the times that this happened, you know, you're sitting on the couch, you hear the water running, you go in. Is the handle turned so you can go in and you can turn it back and shut it off?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay, so it physically had moved, you know, positioning from closed to now it's open, whether it be, you know, a steady stream to full blast. Physically, you'd go back in and it would move.
Correct.
Okay.
More often than not, it was the kitchen sink that would be turning on.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of activity in the kitchen.
A lot of activity in the bathroom. Remember when the tweezers disappeared?
Yeah, tweezers disappeared, and the ketchup disappeared.
The tweezers disappeared, and the ketchup disappeared. The tweezers ended up showing up like a couple weeks later in a completely different spot than where they were supposed to have been. The ketchup. It sounds weird, I know. But the ketchup disappeared and never came back. We never found the ketchup.
Where was the ketchup before it disappeared?
The refrigerator.
Okay, right. So the ketchup's in the fridge. Next thing you know, it's gone and it's never returned.
Correct. Gone.
Huh.
I mean, who does that?
The speakers. There was speaker events. David had his office. He had a couple of unhooked Bose roommate speakers, right?
Bookshelf speakers. I had them on the floor.
On the floor, underneath the credenza. And one day we come home, and both speakers are turned face down, and they're moved out from the credenza.
Yep.
Weird.
And
when we tell these stories, people say, oh, you've got cats. Your cats did that. Oh, your cats knocked the wine out. Oh, your cats must have done this. Or, right?
But if you saw our cats were blobs. It wasn't like they were active.
Yeah, well, I also grew up with cats. And I know cats will sit on things. Cats are not prone to pick up things, move things, relocate items, steal ketchup. Not in a cat's repertoire.
I can't find the ketchup. That is weird.
I know. We still have not found the ketchup.
I don't want to at this point.
Right. We also had a speaker from our surround sound in our living room that out of the blue just showed up face down.
Face down, correct.
From where it was sitting on the floor. It was not like knocked over face down. And it was there were like 5 by 7 inch speakers, something like that.
And I can't tell you how many times I'm sitting in my office by myself and I have a sense that somebody's standing behind me looking over my shoulder. I don't know if you've ever had that feeling before, and you know, how do you measure that feeling? You
right.
really can't. That happened to me numerous times.
That's also very common when associated with a haunting. Just that presence, kind of watching you, lurking behind you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had it a lot in the bathroom, a lot in the kitchen, and Laura had it often. And being, you know, a young person, that was her first experience with that type of a feeling. You know.
Never any visual phenomenon.
No.
Our conversation then went to someone Laura had mentioned as well, the fourth member of the household, Winston the Pug.
To me, aside from the stove coming on with the tea kettle, the thing that was most remarkable to me was our dog Winston. He is a pug, very, very food motivated, and you know, Winston would do anything for food. So one day, at the threshold of the dining area and the kitchen, right as you walk through the dining area into the kitchen, to your immediate right was the refrigerator. Winston was standing at the threshold, barking like, you know, like we've never heard him bark.
His hackles off.
What you might call an alert barking. He was alerting on something. So I'm watching him bark, and his hair standing up in the back of his neck, and I'm witnessing this. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, Mister, what is it? So I'm looking, barking towards the refrigerator. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe he saw a mouse or some kind of critters in the house. And I rolled the refrigerator away from the wall to see what was, maybe there was something under the refrigerator or going on behind the refrigerator. There was nothing. There was no critter. There was no mouse droppings. Does that mean that there wasn't a mouse there? No. All it means is that when I looked, I couldn't see anything. However, Winston would not come into the kitchen. I stood in the kitchen. He was on the dining room side, and I was on the kitchen side, and I held treats, doggy treats, in my hand. And I held them out like a foot in front of his face. And he leaned. He wanted that treat so bad, he was leaning in. But he wouldn't step foot in the kitchen.
He was freaked out.
This persisted. He was very freaked out. This persisted for a couple of days.
Oh, wow.
When he finally, it wasn't just this one thing. He would not go into that kitchen. Every time, you know, he would approach it, he would growl or he would bark. It persisted for a couple of days. And when he finally did, and I saw him do it, when he finally decided that he was going to cross over the threshold to go enter the kitchen, as he crossed through the archway, he moved way to the left and gave the refrigerator a real wide berth before working his way across the kitchen.
So
that was.
Yeah, something was bugging him out.
Yep.
That started the night of Laura's Halloween party.
Was it?
The Ouija board night?
With the Ouija board. It was Halloween. Laura had a Halloween party with a bunch of friends. And that's when they broke out the Ouija board.
Oh, was that the night that I sent everybody home?
Oh, no. That was the night. They were doing witchcraft stuff.
That's right. It was the witchcraft stuff. I caught them doing witchcraft stuff, and they said, okay, break it up. Everybody's going home.
So now, like, the Ouija board and the witchcraft stuff, do you guys believe in that? Is that why you sent them home? Is that why you're freaked out by it?
No. I just as a parent that tried to behave responsibly, when I come across the kids upstairs, Laura and her friends,
Well, they were doing candles and stuff.
Yeah, cannot
be responsible with candles.
That's a fire hazard.
That's right. Yeah. It was probably all very innocent because we probably all did, you know, weird stuff when we were kids, right?
So speaking about the parenting aspect, obviously Laura gave us her aspect of being, you know, a kid in the house while this was going on. What were you guys thinking when it got to the point of, you know, it's been a year, hey, this is kind of weird, little things are happening, it's adding up, and then, you know, the kettle goes on, now it's a fire hazard. What's the parental side, I'll say, of this haunting when you decide it's time to take action?
I don't know. For me, I don't know that the parent in me spoke. It was the adult in me, the fearful adult in me that said, my damn house could burn down. And because up until that point, like I said, we all thought it was rather quaint. Oh, we had a ghost, and Don did some research, and we found out about the, you know, the Briggs that had lived here, and you know, the couple, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Briggs, and their reputation around town, and the types of people that they were, and we learned more and more about them, and it all started fitting together. So we were kind of, you know, enchanted by it, and in fact, I used to think, because, you know, we bought the house from their grandchildren, right? Or one of the grandchildren.
One of the grandchildren.
So, you know, I often thought, I said, Dawn, what, you know, because we wanted to call them and ask them some questions, but we would have been very awkward. It would, you know, how do you call? How do you call them and say, hey, you know, your dead grandmother's over here causing a lot of trouble. We want to ask you some questions about her.
It's a little awkward.
Yeah, it's a little awkward. So, of course, we didn't do that.
Well, I did have an encounter with the woman who lived here, was the wife of the grandson. She came by to visit after we moved in, and we had put in new windows and done some other things to the house. And she was, you know, just stopping in and to make comment, oh, I see you working on the house. And she said, you know, we always wanted to do more things to the house, but Chris always felt funny about it because his grandma was such a stickler for not changing things.
Ah.
She never moved any furniture around.
She had the same draperies in the living room in the window for like 100 years.
Yeah. They had a grand piano down in the space, and she never would move the grand piano to any other, you know, corner or any other space. It was built specifically for that there.
In other words, she didn't like change.
She didn't like things to be moved around and changed.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. So,
well, we were the first non-family to live in this house.
Yes. Correct.
Yeah.
Although, it's kind of cool that the man that delivered me,
the doctor, Laura,
was the man who owned the property and started building this house on the property. And then soon...
The Briggs bought it.
Yeah, the Briggs bought it and ended up finishing the building.
So my brother, who is a lover of research into heritage and stuff like that, wanted me to make sure I asked you, do you know the doctor's name?
Yeah, it's Dr. Stoller.
His name was P.F. Stoller.
I will pass that along to my brother, and hopefully that will appease his... research inquiries. From there, we jumped into the discussion on how they found and why they brought in this ghost hunting paranormal group.
When we moved into this house 17 years ago?
18.
18 years ago. Odd things began happening that any one of them by themselves, you probably would have said, wow, that's weird, and then moved on. But on average, because I was keeping track at the time, on average, we were having an unexplainable event for a full year about once every 10 days, on average.
Yeah, pretty frequent.
So there's a long list of odd things that happened. And we all were kind of enchanted with it, really. Never felt any fear. Mm-hmm. And I was a skeptic. I mean, I've told our story. I can't tell you how many times this has all happened and resolved. I've told it a number of times, and I tell people, if I were listening to me, if I was somebody else listening to me telling these stories, I'm not so sure that I'd believe me, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely, yeah.
But, you know, I'm an engineer, and I'm very fact-based, and I'm skeptical. But what this did for me is it made me a believer in the... what's the word I'm looking for? The
possibilities.
The supernatural.
Right.
The supernatural. You know, we call them, for lack of a better description, you know, we call them ghosts, right? Were they ghosts? You know, there's really no basis that anybody has to say they were ghosts. You know, who knows? You know, it was something unexplainable. Why we attribute it to dead people? I guess that's because that's what everybody does. For all I know, it could have been aliens or a disruption in the space-time continuum or who knows, or things that we can't even imagine or dream of.
Right.
So all I know is that there were odd things that were happening, and didn't really do anything about it until I perceived danger with the stove coming on. And I said, you know, crap, this could burn the house down.
Yeah.
And so that's when I got on the internet, and I was looking for ghost hunters, and I found the Michigan Ghost Hunter Society.
If you'll recall from episode 21, Eric and I were unable to track down the Mid-Michigan Paranormal Ghost Hunting Society, and any attempts we made to contact groups that maybe evolved from it were unsuccessful. Well, Dawn was able to find the group's MySpace page, so we've reached out once again and we'll keep you posted if we hear anything. Apparently, though, they did have a website that was functioning for a while.
When their website was live, they had individual stories of the various homes and places that they had investigated, and ours was covered in there.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about us. They showed photos. They played the audio clip, the EVP. The EVP was kind of interesting because I can imitate it. When you listen to it, it was actually pretty clear, and it sounded like this. It sounded like, "Get them out!" Like that.
So it was that clear?
It wasn't that clear. It wasn't because there was a lot of other background noise and static going on, right? But you can definitely hear, "Get them out!" That's what it sounded like. Get them out. So, like, wow.
Just like Laura had mentioned, Dawn and David confirmed that the Briggs were party people. They loved to host a neighborhood soiree, a get-together, a gathering, and their basement was designed for just that purpose. So it should come as no surprise when the ghost hunting group did show up and they zeroed in on the fiestas downstairs.
When the ghost hunters came here, which is a great story in and of itself, there were three people. One of them was psychic. One of them was the technical guy, the guy that had the recording devices, the temperature sensing devices, and the cameras. And the other person she was kind of like,
"This is intuitive or something."
Yeah, so either way, we're sitting up here, and one looks at the other, and first they asked me, "Do your neighbors have parties much around here?" And I said, "No, this is a really old town, and our neighbors on all sides are about 110 years old. So no, they're not partying." And then one looks at the other and she says, "Do you hear that?" And she goes, "There's a party going on in that basement."
They both said it almost simultaneously.
That's right. Yeah.
They go, "Do you hear that?" And they both look at each other and they go, "Party in the basement."
Wow.
Together at the same time.
So we all go down into the basement and they're taking pictures the whole way. And I don't have the pictures. I look high and low. You're probably familiar with, when I say orbs, you probably know what I'm talking about.
I do indeed.
Okay. So the photos that they were taking upstairs, when we were in the kitchen, they said very clearly and intentionally, "Let's all go sit down in the living room," just like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we all went down, we came into the living room, and we all sat down, and they were taking pictures. Later, they said, you know, ghosts, quote-unquote, are actually pretty compliant when you tell them to do things. They're pretty compliant. And we said, we said, "Let's all go sit down in the living room," because we wanted them to come and join us and sit on the sofa with us. And sure enough, the photos that they took, sitting right beside me was a giant orb about the size of a grapefruit.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty good size, well defined, and there was a couple other orbs in the living room. But when we went downstairs, walking down the stairwell as they were taking photos, there were in those frames. There had to have been hundreds of orbs. Literally, it was peppered with orbs. later told us, they theorized that Mrs. Briggs was she was a very strong individual. She had a very strong presence, and she was a very bright light. And that the other vagabond, that's what the word that they use, vagabond ghosts, were attracted to the stronger spirit and hung around them. So they said that's what was going on in the basement.
Or he could have been calling them in to provide extra energy to help her with the ghost hunters. That was another theory, that she was actually calling them into the house for help, for assistance.
So having listened to the episode, you probably heard Eric and myself discussing the house cleansing process. This is a rare opportunity. Yep. I can ask you, because I had said in that episode, I was like, is it a placebo effect where now perhaps you guys just attribute these weird things that happen in houses to just like, oh, it's just a weird thing? You know, what is sort of your response to me saying like, well, maybe it's the placebo effect where you had people come and they said, oh, we blessed the house. So now if a weird thing happens, you just go, eh, it's nothing. You feel better. The ghost is gone, as opposed to you knowing the ghost is gone.
Sure. Well, first of all, I remember Laura saying that when they asked, do you want them gone? And her answer was like, yes, of course. Well, I was hesitant. I was like, whoa, wait a minute. this woman's lived here for so long. Are we sure this is what we want to do?
Well, I was feeling guilty.
I was feeling very bad. And
like she was throwing her out onto the street. And you even cried.
I did cry.
Yes, you did.
I did cry. I was like, I'm really concerned about this. I'm not sure that that's such a good idea. And they were like, wait, you must understand. She needs to go where she's supposed to go. And this is your house, no longer her house. And so, you know, there was a little education process going on for me. And I reluctantly said, okay, go ahead. and then they did the cleansing, and it was, I was just talking to David about it tonight. I didn't think it was going to work. I was like, whatever they're doing is silly. But first of all, they were doing a lot of, you know, religious type stuff, and we're non-believers, so
right.
I just didn't think it was going to work. Whatever they were doing was not going to work, and we were still going to have these issues. So from that perspective, I was perfectly prepared for everything to keep happening. But it didn't.
David, anything to add?
I really didn't have any emotion about it. I wanted it to stop. And because, like I said, fear of burning the house down.
Right.
And they went around to each room and they did a prayer they held hands. And by the way, we're agnostic, so, or atheist.
We're agnostic atheists.
Yeah, we're agnostic.
No. Possible.
The double A, as okay, I like to call it.
Yeah, so, okay, you want to walk around and, you know, you guys are the professionals and you know what you're doing, so go ahead and hold hands and recite your chants and sprinkle sea salt. And they did that in each room. And then we said thank you, and they left. And I didn't really have an expectation one way or the other. Was it going to stop or was it going to continue? I was hopeful that it would stop. And it did. I mean, you know, a day, 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, a week, 2 weeks, a month, 2 months, 3 months. After several months of nothing happening, I was pretty confident that that was it. It was over.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
Cool. So, yeah, whatever they did, it did the trick.
Yeah. Well, it would seem, right? It would seem.
Thus far. And how long have you been in the house since that cleansing?
17 years.
Yeah, 17 years.
And you've not had a real... Yeah, no relapse or anything?
The first year it was quote-unquote haunted, and then all the years subsequent, it was It was like any old regular house.
Cool. And I guess my final question will be, thus far, at this moment in time, you have not been able to locate the pictures or the audio recording?
No, I have not. And, you know, I had them for a long time. So, you know, you have a computer, and then you get another 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 computer. And as you transition from one platform to the next, I don't remember deliberately removing them. In fact, I went out, I found one of my old external hard drives, and we ordered a cable because it's an old-fashioned FireWire drive. And so we got a cable to go from FireWire to USB, and we're pretty excited about it. Mm-hmm. And hooked it up, and I transferred everything on it to my new hard drive, which took hours, by the way, because of old FireWire. Anyways, I went through, and I searched pretty carefully, and I couldn't find anything. Couldn't find any of the photos. Couldn't find the recording.
I appreciate you looking into it, and I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me on this lovely evening.
Sure.
Yeah, well, thanks, Tommy.
The Brothers Mysterio.
So we'd like to thank Dawn and David for chiming in. They brought a lot to the table.
Thank you. Thank you.
So let's kind of start, I guess I'll start here. Let's just talk about, a lot of people don't quite understand the importance of a firsthand account. And I think this is kind of a good show for it, because Laura was a great guest, obviously. She gave us great information. Some of it might have been a little skewed, but she was a kid at the time. Memories change. We're definitely not trying to like make her look bad or throw her under the bus or say that she lied or anything. But human nature is what it is. And a lot of people will come to the show and say, like, my grandma had the craziest thing happen to her. And then they'll tell me the story, and I'll say, oh, can I talk to her? And they'll say, no, you know, she passed away, or she doesn't do interviews. And they'll be like, okay, we're not going to use it then. You know, I'll keep it in the back of my mind for personal reference, but it's not going to be on the show. And they'll be like, well, why not? And, you know, it's like the game of telephone. Like, some stories change. Even if it's a slight change, a small detail here or there, it's like making a copy of an audio tape or an old VHS tape, if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Every generation, the copy gets a little bit less. It's a little bit not as crisp, not as clear, which is just like memories, just like these stories. And I think that this is a great example of that, and it shows why the Brothers Mysterium always go to the source, the person who witnessed it, experienced it. And I guess we could start there with some of these incidents that David and Dawn were able to verify, clear up, or make additions to. So let's start with the wine bottle.
The wine bottle.
Interesting thing. I think, I don't know if Laura said that the wine bottle landed sitting up perfectly, or if I kind of interjected that in our conversation.
I do actually remember her saying it. And when I was editing that episode and putting it all together, I searched and searched for her saying it. Because I remember one of us asking, I thought, and I think I remember, here's a good example of how stories can change. I think I remember her saying it was standing upright, because I remember hunting for that clip, but I couldn't find it. So.
Yeah, so her mom kind of cleared that up. That story, basically everything else was the same, except that it's just great to hear it from the person who was there. The mom was there, she was sleeping, she woke up, and it's a little less conjecture, a little less. My mom had told me this. Two stories that definitely had different details were the light bulb, where, you know, we were told the bulb was taken out, unscrewed, taken out, put on a shelf, and then suddenly is back. Her mom and dad cleared up for us that was not the case. They were unscrewed to the point where it's, you know, very loose, you don't screw it anymore, it'll fall out. And they came home and it would be screwed all the way back in, super tight, turned on. And the interesting thing there is that the father, David, was the only one who could reach it unless somebody like got a step stool or a ladder or whatever. And obviously, a young Laura was not going around plugging in lights for fun. And Dawn said it wasn't her either. But there is a bit of a difference between a, you know, like we even go into, we were like, how is it possible to explain a light bulb going from a shelf now back into the socket? So it's still weird that somebody had turned them on, you know, literally turned, twisted them in, but slightly different. And same holds true for the blender story, where the blender was actually reassembled sitting in the base, just turned off when the power was then put on. So that changes that story as well. I would still say paranormal happenings, though, still odd things, even with those details corrected, if you will.
Yeah, just going off the light thing again, and I remember hearing this somewhere, but there's that trick that people do with flashlights to communicate with ghosts. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Right.
I have.
So if a light bulb is unscrewed just enough, pieces of it can still make contact, and so the circuit between the light and the light switch can, like, you know, slowly be closed and closed and closed until the point where the bulb starts to heat up, and then it slightly expands, and then it remakes the connection that's solid enough that you can see that the light is on. You know
what
I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, and I know that works for flashlights. I don't know if that works for... Well, it does. I mean, I'm kind of assuming, and it's always dangerous to assume, just from talking with them, it seems like they unscrewed them a pretty good amount.
Right,
you
okay.
Know? I don't think it was just like a small twist, and they're like, okay, because they sounded really, you know, kind of shocked that it was twisted all the way back in.
Right.
Which is good. And another thing I liked a lot, too, is Dawn and David both are, they have that healthy skepticism. They said, you know, they were kind of enchanted. It's kind of quaint. Oh, we got a little ghost of the house. Hey, that's ain't nothing wrong with that. So they liked it, but when these things would happen, and David even said, he's like an engineer.
Right.
They were like, okay, why did this happen? How could this happen? And they even said they, you know, sat at the blender, pressing different buttons, trying to recreate it. Where was the failure? What's wrong with the mechanism? How would it go? How would it turn itself on and turn itself on in this setting? So they definitely tinkered around and explored and were unable to recreate some of these things, which is always good because it helps take away any doubt that, you know, we have hearing about it later.
I like how, in a way, David presents himself as the open-minded skeptic, in a way, because, you know, he says, I'm an engineer, man of science, and then they both clearly state, like, you know, we're agnostic atheists. But then when he's considering the possibilities of what this all could be, he's like, it could be aliens. It could be a rip in the time-space continuum. It could be this. So, you know, I like that he's like analytical, but at the same time, then he's like, well, there's a whole spectrum of possibilities here.
Yes. He's got that healthy skepticism. He's not a closed-minded skeptic, and he's not one just to say like, okay, if I didn't do it and the other two people in the house didn't do it, then a ghost clearly did it. You know, he's saying
right.
He doesn't know what else is at work, but he's open to the possibilities. So that was definitely cool. They also added a few things that we were not aware of from our original conversation, such as, you know, events happening during the night and the day, the frequency of about, like, you know, every 10 days or so. Some of the prominent ones are the floorboard squeaking, and, you know, when you live in a house, you know the sounds, you know, specific spots in the hallway or coming up the stairs, and it definitely sounded like movement.
For sure.
And then the phantom mumbled voices happening quite a bit, which is a very creepy thing, and phantom voices will be coming up in a future episode of The Brothers Mysterium. Count on that.
Mm-hmm.
And one cool thing was Dawn was able to track down the Mid-Michigan Ghost Hunters Society MySpace page. As we had said, we were unable to track down this paranormal group that came and did their thing and got the audio recordings and the photos.
I didn't think to check the graveyard that is MySpace. So,
yeah, that is the place of internet ghosts. I actually jokingly said they must be the last ones left on. It's probably just them and Tom, the only two left on MySpace. But maybe from that page we can find some of those members' individual MySpace pages and track them down through Facebook.
There's always a way.
A little creepy and a little stalkerish, but anything to get the truth.
It's research.
Exactly. And while they were unable still to find the photos or that EVP, David did sort of recreate it to the best of his ability.
That was good.
They both said, even though there was white noise and stuff, they could hear it, which is something that we had kind of talked about, like, how clear are these things? Is the power of suggestion? Is it not? But they said it, you know, it wasn't as clear as his own voice, but they said they did make out that sort of like, get them out type of pronunciation, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
Vocal pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Which was cool, just to get a little more clarity onto that. Is the doctor's name the name that you were searching for?
Okay.
Trying to find?
Yeah. So like I said, I narrowed it down to two names in the end, but I couldn't validate either one. So I decided, you know, not to risk it or just throw both names out to be confusing. I spent a lot of time on the Clinton County's database of property records and all that kind of stuff and deed transfers and all that. Unfortunately, the Briggs family was involved in real estate, so their name came up on literally hundreds of documents. So it was kind of tough to narrow it down. But in the end, I did get it down to two names. And the two names were, I'm looking at my notes here, a Dr. Darrell E. Jones, who was born in 1900 and died in 1971 and is buried in Mount Rest Cemetery in St. John's, Michigan, and a Paul Frederick Stoller, who was born in 1913 and died in 1971 and is also buried in Mount Rest Cemetery in St. John's, Michigan. So Frederick Stoller, P.F. Stoller, as I think they found his name when they Googled it, is the correct answer. So I had him there. I actually had my money on Darrell Jones, though. So
okay, so we uncovered some truth there, some of the history behind the mystery. And the last cool thing was not we kind of got the flip side of it. We got Laura's perspective as a kid in the house with this happening. We were able to get the parents' side of things and their perspective on what was going on and how they handled it. And then we kind of guessed at a house cleansing, and I think I'm the one who was like, do they even work? Is it a placebo effect? But after speaking with them, they've been there, been in the house for like 18 years now. They said nothing has happened of the sort, and, you know, it always helps to speak to them directly. They're logical, cool people. I think that, you know, if things were happening, they're not the type to be like, we did the house cleansing just because the, burner's bursting into flames every now and then doesn't mean anything. It seems like whether the cleansing or something else in that time frame or whatever that they did seems to have indeed worked, as the house has remained sort of haunted free ever since. So that also is interesting to add to our discussion of this residual haunting.
For sure.
Any final thoughts?
I don't know. I'm just kind of like curious about how it all comes together in a way, because like they did the house cleansing and they called the Ghost Hunter Society, but at the same time, they didn't seem like super, super, super concerned. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it was so much of like, right. Like usually a house cleansing is there's something unholy here. We're being terrorized. Let's get it out. I think for them, it was more like, hey, they're open-minded. We might have a ghost here. And now that it's getting a bit dangerous, we might as well try anything to stop it. And it seems like whatever, you know, it's the first thing they tried worked.
It's just an interesting move, because usually that's the go-to for like the hardcore believer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess they were trying to, you know, going down the list of things, and they just hit it on the early side with, and whether it was just, you know, like we said, their emotions and their feelings of, okay, we want you to leave, we've been friendly, we've been cool with you up till now, but you gotta go, you're getting dangerous, or if it was whatever words and prayers the ghost hunting group did that worked, or if it was just the mindful wishes of,
now
we want this to be our house, free, leave, something. Apparently something did the trick, because the paranormal activity ceased.
Indeed. And something Laura failed to mention is that she was performing black magic in the house. She told us she was playing with a Ouija board, but not doing black magic. Witchcraft.
That is true. She was dabbling in the witchy arts, which, I think David said it best, where we all do kind of weird things as kids.
Yeah.
I don't hold too much thought in that whatever she was doing with her friends
it would just be funny if like in truth like she failed to mention it, but in reality like they had like a hardcore like session in there and they summoned a demon and like it's like, oh, I'll leave that part out.
Well, she doesn't want to get in trouble, she might get grounded.
Exactly, there you go.
But just to wrap up, I think this was a cool one, and we ourselves never know where this is going to go. You know, we'll kind of screen somebody, then we'll sit down, do an interview with them, get the info, and in this case, you know, it was cool that we got the same haunting from three different people. It's like kind of the first time we've approached it from both sides of, you know, like a child in the home to the parents in the home. And this kind of became a family affair, which was awesome. And we got a lot of questions answered. I think it's cool we did this kind of follow-up just to answer our own curiosities, as well as I'm sure some listeners had some questions about things. We got that first-person perspective from three different perspectives, which is also always great to have. And we just want to thank Laura, David, and Dawn for being down to share everything that happened in their home.
Absolutely.